Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Maddock, joined today by my buddy, Pat Corain. We both had articles out over the last week and a half or so. I guess when you guys are listening to this, it'll be a little bit later than that, about zero running back in 2020. Specifically, I think both of us are working on a targets article to that end, specific zero RB guys we like. We'll talk about that a little bit towards the latter half of the show. But I mean, let's just start right here, Pat. Do you buy largely the results from 2019 that that indicated that zero running back is dusted off?
Not at all.
I don't either.
You made a good point in your article that there are some trends that we need to be paying attention to in the NFL. You know, more wide receivers on the field, less workhorse running backs, and then the ones that are workhorse running backs, like Christian McCaffrey, is like an old school LaDainian Tomlinson level workhorse running back. And so there is, you know, a consideration there. But neither of us are saying don't draft Christian McCaffrey. You should draft Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, you should not draft Michael Thomas over Christian McCaffrey because you are trying to have a zero running back strategy. That's not right. The point.
Right. Take Christian McCaffrey. The problem with running back ADPs right now, and I think where we both are, is that, you know, you very quickly end up with this group of running backs that have a lot of red flags. Even guys like Derrick Henry, who did it, like he was a stud last year, but yep, he did it without actually all that much in terms of high value carries. Like, he wasn't getting this massive goal line workload, and he wasn't getting really any receptions. He mostly did it on extremely efficient runs from outside the goal line area, which is not necessarily something you want to bet on. So you kind of quickly, and I would say he's one of the better bets of you know, the second tier running back. So you're in a position this year where, and in your article, you quoted Jack Miller's article at RotoViz, and he put it really well, where you're basically, if you're taking these running backs in the second, third, and fourth round range, for the most part, you're betting against wide receiver scoring that has historically just been a lot stronger in that range. And you're betting on like a 1 year sample of running backs outscoring wide receivers in that range. So it's generally, I think it's an unlikely bet.
I mean, Jack's research went more, like my research was more focused on the scoring distributions from last year, just to show how absurd it was. I mean, obviously I found that useful because that's how my brain approached the problem, which was that the money stat from my article is that about 85% of the 20-point PPR games came from guys who were drafted in the top 100 picks, and there were only three guys who finished as, you know, minimum like running back threes, so like top 32 at the position, who were drafted after the top 100 picks, and one of those guys was Raheem Mostert, who was in the position of, like, you didn't actually know if you ever wanted to start him or not, because he was never like, every week you'd be like, well, is Tevin Coleman just going to get the work or not? And we had so many examples of guys who were completely useless when they got the role. Like, that's actually more than anything. I think what caused zero running back to be a catastrophe was every injury fill-in other than Latavius Murray was a total waste, right? Ty Johnson, J.D. McKissick, Bo Scarborough, like all of the Detroit running backs, Malcolm Brown, like literally every time a starting running back got hurt, his fill-in did bad, essentially.
Yeah, you even had like Mike Boone whiff.
Mike Boone whiffed in championship week.
Yeah, and then you had, like you mentioned, the Pittsburgh running backs were just a complete headache.
Samuels had one good game. He had one really good game. He didn't get to 20 PPR points, but he did have a very good game, and that was it.
Right. And then you mentioned that in the article that Ronald Jones was one of the guys who actually paid off. But, you know, I had Ronald Jones everywhere last year.
Not a high win rate player.
No, and he was a frustrating start. Like, he would there was a stretch there where it looked like he could really – become a league-winning type of player, and he never quite lived up to it. He had a few good games, but he never kind of put it all together. So they're really just – it was slim pickings. Even the hits weren't huge hits, as you point out.
Exactly. Like there wasn't an Arian Foster. There wasn't an Alfred Morris. There wasn't even a 2018 James Conner, right? There was no one guy – who by selecting them later in your drafts, you just immediately had this monster win rate as a result of selecting them. Like, you could win with Ronald Jones on your teams, but he would not have been an anchor to winning teams.
Yeah, we're looking for like Devonta Freeman in his second year. He became, I think it was like 2016, or we're looking for Alvin Kamara in his rookie year, Nick Chubb, those types of dudes who emerge as like studs. And there really weren't any of them last year. But I think that's an anomaly and not something that we should be, you know, all that concerned about. And I guess I would be concerned about it if people agreed with me that it was an anomaly. But they do not.
And this was reflected in the market. Yeah.
Yeah. They think I'm crazy for thinking it's an anomaly and that we need to chase running backs or we're all going to die. So, you know, I think we're getting better value than we were last year. And so it makes sense to employ a similar strategy as I was employing last year in a lot of leagues that with zero running back didn't really work last year. I think it'll work much better this year.
So I did a Football Guys Players Championship draft last night, $350 to enter, $500,000 up top. These guys all went in the third round of drafts in the third round, 303 David Johnson, a guy who looked like he had been frozen in carbonite, or at least his lower half had been frozen in carbonite. Then we have Todd Gurley, who signed to a $5 million one-year contract by the Atlanta Falcons. We didn't even know until Monday if he was even going to pass his physical with the team. Now, he did pass the physical, so you know maybe we're seeing a little bit of a dead cat bounce with him there. James Conner
did not support any running back value last year.
None.
None.
Yeah. James Conner, who I actually like. I actually think Conner is an example of a guy who went in the first round last year. The only thing that really changed with his context is that he was banged up last year. But if you're drafting running backs, you just accept that they get hurt. That's an occupational hazard. Melvin Gordon went in the third round, and Leonard Fournette all went in the third round. So the one guy there that I like taking is James Conner, and I'm not windmilling that selection or anything.
Yeah, James Conner is a guy. So I had an article on Established to Run on zero running back as well, and I was kind of doing just more of like an overview of the strategy and stuff.
But yeah,
the thing that I think is important, not just in zero running back, but just in terms of drafting running backs in general, is that you need like a realistic ceiling. So to me, like Todd Gurley, Leonard Fournette, those are not good picks because it's just very unlikely. I mean, let's take Leonard Fournette. Leonard Fournette had everything go right last year, and he sucked.
And he still wasn't a league-winning player. Yeah.
No. And he's not going to get – when I say everything went right, I mean in terms of his role. His role is going to be smaller this year. They brought in Chris Thompson.
Yeah, Chris Thompson.
Right. They've got Armstead actually looked pretty good last year.
New
offense coordinator. I could see his rushing role getting scaled back. LaVisca Chenault was like you know, played like wildcat.
Like a wildcat guy. Yeah, I mean, if LaVisca Chenault takes 5 goal line opportunities away over the course of a season from Fournette, that's like a total disaster to his ceiling. It really is.
Exactly. Exactly. So he just doesn't have a ceiling. So he should not – you just should not take Leonard Fournette unless he somehow falls like 4 rounds. Like that's – he's wildly overdrafted because he doesn't have a ceiling. I like the James Conner call. Conner definitely does have a ceiling. It's risky. There are numerous ways that he can fail. I think Anthony McFarland could maybe steal enough through the air.
Big Ben could just not ever be good again, right? And we could have the Mason Rudolph experience again.
Please no, but yeah, that's a real risk. And yeah, but I mean, you're swinging for the fences there with Conner, which is what you need to be doing when you take running back. So I don't mind that one. Although, man, I wish he was like in the 4th round instead of the 3rd. The running backs get priced up so much in FFPC.
Yeah, and I mean, Clyde Edwards-Helaire went 15th overall in this draft I did last night. And I actually, like, I think he's going to be maybe useless for the first 4 weeks of the season, right? Like, I think Damien will just start as the starter almost for sure. But Clyde Edwards-Helaire, second half of the year, is going to be like 18 touches a game in the best offense in football. And he's, like, if he scored 300 PPR points, I don't think I'd be that surprised probably.
I think I'd be pretty surprised if he had 300 PPR points. I don't think he'll get
I guess to be clear, the reason why I would not be surprised is of every offense in football, it would be very easy for him to just score 20 touchdowns, and like that would happen in the flow of the offense. Like it wouldn't be like a McCaffrey situation where they gave him every touchdown.
Right. Yeah, I think generally to do that, he's going to need like 200 carries. And I just don't see him getting to that. But yeah, I'm actually kind of more on the Damian Williams side of it because of their ADPs. I think Williams is.
I mean, I've drafted Damian more than I've drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but I completely get the logic for why Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going this high, basically. So yeah, that's where I'm at.
If he locks up, you know, the majority of a lead role, he needs to be like a 1A. He doesn't need to be like a true lead back in that offense, and he could pay off. So, yeah, I mean, to my point earlier, if you're looking at ceiling, you can pretty easily see the path to CEH becoming the lead back there, and that's all the ceiling you need.
So the other part of this equation, though, is that not only are people just pushing running backs up the board, right? They're just like, oh, are you a running back who has a pulse at all? Please, you know, go get as far up the board as possible. But they're also overreacting to the super flat scoring at wide receiver last year. So basically what happened is Michael Thomas destroyed the position. I think it was like 23 PPR points per game. Chris Godwin was like 19.5 PPR points per game. And then there were literally 20 guys in between 18 and like 16.5 PPR points per game. So people are like, oh, well, wide receivers don't score points anymore. And I think that this is like, yeah, guys just ran bad. There was weird touchdown distributions. Now, if you wanted to make the counter argument that teams are spreading the ball around more, they are less likely to funnel, you know, 30% of targets to guys. I do kind of buy that argument, but I don't buy that like in 1 year scoring distributions change at the wide receiver position that much.
Yeah, I don't either. And, you know, we're looking at recent trends here of wide receiver scoring, and last year was an outlier among recent trends. So I don't think we're saying that it's not like we have our heads in the sand here about the way the NFL is working and there's more wide receivers on the field and stuff, but we do not expect, and we should not expect to see the wide receiver scoring that we did last year where you had, I mean, part of it was injuries. Like Juju Smith-Schuster just was a total failure. Hopefully because Big Ben was injured, although I do think maybe we're not factoring in.
There's certainly a chance that I've been thinking about this, that, you know, when you approach things, how you and I largely approach things, which is, you know, you make historical comps for guys, you look at how they have done relative to other players their age over time in the NFL. Smith-Schuster is one of those guys who just looks incredible because he, I think last season he was third all time in receiving yards amongst players his age, right? And it was every comp you could possibly make for him was an insanely good comp. Like he just looked so good historically speaking. And you know what I remembered is he has 297-yard touchdowns in his career, which like over a 20 what would be like a 25 game sample because he missed a couple games as a rookie, and he missed a game because of a suspension too. Like it is possible that his efficiency numbers are like a little weird and a little skewed because of those 297-yard touchdowns. Now, granted, he still scored 297-yard touchdowns. Many other players have had those opportunities and have not done them. But there's a possibility we maybe overrated him a little bit because of, like, some weird sample size stuff. It's possible.
I agree. Yeah, I think it's possible. But, you know, regardless, when you have – Smith-Schuster was going in, like, that late first, early second round range, and he just completely busted. And then you got guys like – you know, you look at Davante Adams, who's – generally the wide receiver two this year. He was pretty good last year, but he just struggled through injuries. Same for
He missed
Tyreek Hill.
seven weeks, I think.
Yeah. So I think this year you also have guys who could potentially emerge as superstars as well. Like AJ Brown to me, he sort of profiles like he's in this old school offense generally in terms of their rushing, but I think he might be able to be kind of one of these old school wide receivers where he's just getting like the vast majority of their targets and their air yards. He's someone I'm pretty excited about. But anyway, there are these guys that the other guys are, you know, the Falcons offense looks like it's going to be just a huge funnel to both Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. You know, after they get rid of Hooper, they don't really have a wide receiver three to speak of. So I think there are guys who can have big target share this year in a way that will make 2019 look like an outlier.
Are you this is an aside from our zero running back topic here, but like, are you buying this Hayden Hurst stuff?
Not really.
I haven't drafted him once yet.
Yeah, I don't have any of them. He wasn't like bad in Baltimore, but I don't know. I mean, it's like he's joining a new team in the midst of all this, you know, everything
in the midst of a global pandemic. Yeah.
And it wasn't like he was very good. Like his team spent a first round pick on him and then gave up on him.
Yeah. And he was outplayed by a fourth round pick.
Yeah. Although that Andrews is pretty awesome. So
yeah. Andrews is absolutely so good.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, and Hooper, I think is probably not an amazing actual talent, so that makes me a little more bullish on Hurst. Maybe he can
right
come
that's
in
very true that's play. A very good point as it pertains to Hooper, like not like Hooper's some great player.
Yeah, but yeah, I haven't been on Hurst. It's not that I'm that down on him, but there's a little bit of excitement around him, and I just haven't been able to get my to get on that bandwagon.
So the argument against zero running back, and I guess we should clarify, when I say zero running back, what I actually mean is modified zero running back, which is that I'm extremely likely to select a running back with my first pick in the first round.
What if you have the 108?
Exactly. So if I have the probably to the 106, I'm taking a running back, right? And I maybe even sometimes at like 112, I take Derrick Henry. Right. Or something like that. But where the true zero running back builds come is from the back half when you're like, what am I going to take? Am I taking Joe Mixon or Davante Adams or Travis Kelce? Right. And then at that point, you're like, yeah, let's just take the guy who, like, those guys are undeniably going to score more points. They're just better bets at their position. And that's kind of the thesis is just take the guys who are going to score more points and don't worry that much about positional distinction.
Yeah, and then also didn't happen last year, but historically we know that there are profiles of running backs that are available
that are bad
later in drafts that'll break out, and that you can still, like, the zero running back strategy is not punt running back. That is not the goal.
Correct.
We are trying to be stronger at running back than our league mates while also hammering the shit out of them at wide receiver and, you know, and FFPC tight end as well. And to your point in your article, you mentioned that, you know, it's more important than it was in the past to get a quarterback with a high-end ceiling, as we've seen these running quarterbacks take over the league.
So, that's a huge thing right now in fantasy, which is that you used to be able to really make up quarterback ceilings on the waiver wire, and it's a lot harder to do that now because quarterbacks are scoring like the high end outcomes are, one, they're more stable because they're based off of rushing, and you know, those formats, like it's just a little bit easier, but also their ceilings are higher. Like Lamar's scoring more points, Kyler's going to score more points, Dak is going to score more points, and the running quarterbacks are no longer exclusively running quarterbacks, but they're running and throwing quarterbacks.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's a good point. So, you know, but if you're loading up at basically ideally in zero running back, you want to be strong. You want to be stronger than your league mates at every single position.
At every single position.
Yeah. What you're trying to do to execute that goal, what you're doing is you're avoiding running backs in the early rounds, especially in those sections of the draft where the bust rates are extremely high. And so that's where you get, like, the third and the fourth round have just historically been, especially the fourth round, has been just like a disaster for drafting running backs. And really, like, through, I was doing some research this week looking at hit rates, and basically what you see is there's a pretty high hit rate for first round running backs. It drops off at the second or the third round. It's not so great. It's around like 50%. And then you get into the fourth round, it drops off a cliff.
Yeah, and these are like, these, because those are all guys that are like, you really got to talk yourselves into them.
Yes. But then it stays like, the running back position has got like one hand as it's hanging off the cliff from the fourth round, but then through the 10th round. So you're getting like, there's like one guy around from the fourth to the 10th. But that's, so avoid the guy in the fourth round, avoid probably the guy in the fifth round, and maybe wait in around the sixth or so and get enough guys, you know, from like the fifth to the 10th that you'll be strong at the running back position, and you can improve your hit rates compared to just the market by targeting guys who are pass catchers, starting guys who are in uncertain backfields, targeting guys who are athletic. Generally, you want to target guys who are on the younger side. So there's ways that we can, you know, you're not just like completely throwing dart. Like Marlon Mack is someone who is not the profile of a guy we're looking to take, right? Because he's going to be in a three-man committee. He doesn't catch passes.
His team has no incentive because they're not going to give him a contract. Like they don't have any incentive to play him a significant amount. Like there literally is not, like, the only thing you can point to for why you would want to draft Marlon Mack is he has been good in the past. Like he has been a starting running back in the past. And that's
he has been a starting running back. Yeah. He's probably the least athletic running back on his team. Like he's just not. Yeah. So you want to target guys who have an immediate path to receiving, have a plausible path to goal line work, and then are going to, and ideally are athletic enough to they can make fantasy relevant. They can produce fantasy relevant scores on small sample sizes, and then force their coaches to play them more. So that's kind of the perfect, like, you know, Alvin Kamara, who turned out to be way more athletic than his combine measurables, is sort of a prototype for this, where he's in this ambiguous backfield as a rookie. That's when they had, I think when he came in as a rookie, right? They had Adrian Peterson.
And
Mark Ingram. It's just like, how does this dude see the field? But neither of those guys was actually that good. And Kamara turned out to be much more athletic than we realized. And just his path was through the passing game. So you get these guys where it's like, well, he's going to see passes at a minimum. And then they can break out as the season goes on. So you're getting stronger at running back as the season goes on. But right away, you have this kind of nice little startable PPR dynamo.
So the issue with this, and I everything you just said, like that has been, you know, sort of like long-term theory belief as it pertains to fantasy football strategy. The problem is it did not work for those guys last year, right? Darwin didn't work. Justice Hill mm-hmm. didn't work. Daryl Henderson didn't work. The Atlanta guys, it did not work for them. Like it was just a situation where everyone we thought was athletic, you know, profiled to catch passes, all that stuff. We were waiting for it to work out, and it ended up not working out. And I am sort of two minds, right? Which is, I don't think that the NFL changed that much overnight. You know, I don't think we're in a situation where we'll never see injury fill-in running backs do well again. I think the issue that we are kind of facing, though, is a ton of these situations where, like, you know, let's say Derrick Henry gets hurt. Does Darrington Evans just become the guy, or is, like, Kari Blossom-Game playing 20 snaps a game? Let's say if Kerryon Johnson gets injured, do the Lions just turn things over to DeAndre Swift? Or are we getting, you know, Ty Johnson and Bo Scarborough again? You know, kind of looking at the market, the one running back I expect to just be the Uber handcuff, where one injury, the guy becomes top five running back, is with Tony Pollard in Dallas, where if Ezekiel Elliott got injured, suspended, whatever, immediately Tony Pollard would be one of the best running backs in fantasy. And I think that is this shift, though, is a market reason why zero running back might not be as effective of a strategy if this is a trend that carries over year to year.
Yeah. Well, I think the guys you mentioned last year, it's easy to say this now, but I think, you know, Henderson, Hill, Thompson, they look like fool's gold because they didn't catch passes. So they were all athletic, but as it turns out, none of them were really receiving backs. I mean,
yeah, we thought Henderson, they would be, but they weren't.
Exactly. And, you know, Henderson didn't – like, he had
– he couldn't even really play.
Yeah, he could – yeah. Gurley had the second highest receiving market share for a running back in the league last year. So – and then they cut him. So, like, Henderson just clearly was not someone they consider a receiving running back. I know you're bullish on Akers, and I think that's, you know, a reason.
I'm bullish on Akers because I just don't know how much more they could broadcast that – They don't believe in Henderson. And I watched Malcolm Brown play, and let me tell you my tale from the tape. Malcolm Brown, he ain't it, right? He's just a guy.
Yeah, I agree. I think Akers is a good play, and he's someone that I, you know, as we get down to like the fourth, fifth range, I'm interested in, because I think he's got that path to receiving work. And I think Henderson just has failed as, and maybe just didn't have the profile as a receiving running back. So I think it's key to what last year has kind of reminded me, is that it's not enough to have these dynamic guys who might be able to catch passes. It's like, we really, really need to see them be able to catch passes and be in offenses that are going to throw them the ball. So you mentioned DeAndre Swift. He's someone that I'm like, really struggling with, because
same, I think
you can project him, like if he's used as a receiver where he's getting like, you know, 2-3 receptions a game, that I don't
plus
really
plus probably the goal line work.
Right, exactly. He could, I would say he's probably getting mixed in on the goal line, and you know, he's like their primary pass catcher, then I'm good. But the problem is that offense doesn't really throw to the running backs that much. And then if they also are throwing to this guy Huntley, who they took in the fifth round, you know, or whoever else, Ty Johnson, that's just going to suck. Like if it's like a committee for the receiving work, then he's just going to be a total bust. So he's a very, I think it'll sort of seem obvious in retrospect how to play Swift, but I'm really struggling with whether or not he's he's a good play. He's in the same range as Akers, and I prefer Akers at the moment. But
choosing between those two guys, I will take Akers every time. I agree with you because Swift has that receiving profile. He's not in an offense that values that, but I mean, I do think that good NFL coaches tend to draw things up, like, or at least our good NFL coaches are going to be more flexible based on the talent that they have available to them. Detroit just spent a pretty premium pick on DeAndre Swift. They don't have their third wide receiving option is, I believe, Danny Amendola re-signed, though I right, like, if you have a gun to my head, I wouldn't say that's 100% true right now, but I believe that is true that Amendola re-signed. But, like, you know, they don't have a fourth guy there, you know, outside of Hockenson, Galladay, and Jones that's, like, really demanding targets. So, you know, like a 9% target share or something for Swift is pretty attainable, I think.
The other thing about Swift is that the Lions use their running backs a bit further downfield than most teams, which I think is pretty interesting for an actually good receiver like Swift. You know, if he's getting targeted like a couple yards downfield, like Kerryon Johnson was last, and Kerryon's ADOT was like 4 last year, which is really high for a running back. Most running backs are targeted right around the line of scrimmage. So if he's getting used like a little bit more dynamically as a receiver instead of just kind of dump offs, he might not need the same target share to pay off. He could be like an explosive receiving weapon because of his own skill and then because of the targets that he's seeing potentially being a little bit further downfield. So I'm kind of like, I'm definitely trying to get exposure to Swift. He's not, you just can't, I don't think you can be locked out of Swift this year. He's got a lot of upside as a zero running back type of dude. But I'm, you know, at his current ADP, luckily, he tends to bounce around a little bit, so you can sometimes
you can randomly get him around after his ADP in some drafts for sure. And you know, as soon as we get one Matt Patricia quote where they're like, "Oh yeah, carry on," you know, he's been with the team, you know, he's part of our organization, like whatever, that'll have an impact. And you know, probably they don't cut Bo Scarborough, probably they don't cut Ty Johnson. They're going to bring 4 running backs into the season. Like there are avenues to Swift getting cheaper in drafts for sure. I want to go back to the wide receiving point though, which is I think a huge element of our argument, which is that it's not a good strategy to be drafting like crappy wide receiver 2 seasons instead of stable running back 2 seasons, right? So like If we think that wide receiver scoring is actually going to start really flattening out like this, and that's the new trend, we need to be making adjustments in the way that we're drafting these guys. Now, I don't think that it's true. I think that like you can just go look at every instance last year of why some of these guys flattened out, and you can be like quarterback or injury or whatever. Like I think you can pretty much do that for most of the guys in the top 20, but I don't also want to be coming into this with a hypothesis and then finding evidence to support what I already believe as it pertains to those guys. So kind of what is your thought on this, on the flattening of wide receiver scoring?
Yeah, I think, I mean, Jack Miller's article summed this up really well, where, you know, we're betting on a regression to the mean from wide receiver ones, is that we didn't have the high end wide receiver scoring last year. And I think, like you say, there's a lot of reasons for that that are explainable. It's not just that there's like this shift away from stud wide receivers in the NFL. And I think like in some cases, the wide receivers who fell flat on their face last year or disappointed, like Devontae Adams looks like in a better position than he did last year. Like the team has nothing going on at wide receiver. Yeah. I mean, he could potentially rival Michael Thomas for the wide receiver one this year. I mean, his target share could be outrageous. So there's like, if anything, I'm getting, you know, as you look at these wide receivers, it's really exciting. I mean, I think like DeAndre Hopkins is someone that I'm concerned about changing teams, and probably not in an offense. I mean, if we're talking about like a modern offense that's going to spread the ball around a little bit more and not feed one guy, like that's the offense we're talking about. The the Cardinals, I don't think, are going to support this massive target share for Hopkins. Now, he could have an awesome season in terms of efficiency. They could just have – they could kind of finally get in the amount of plays that we thought
but
they
might
kind of do.
But that's the air raid thing, right, is you're not supposed to be giving the ball to a guy on 30% of the plays, because
exactly.
The air raid was supposed to be designed to gain yards and score points with shitty players. You're supposed to be able to throw it to Larry Fitzgerald and get first downs. You're supposed to be able to use Chase Edmonds and get there. Like, you're not supposed to be giving – the defense, like, oh, well, we know the ball is going to DeAndre Hopkins on this play. Like, that's the whole point.
Exactly, yeah. So there are some guys where I'm a little, you know, concerned if they can get to the target share that we want to see. But it's not – I don't think that there's just this – I mean, Tyreek Hill could smash this year. He struggled with a lot of injuries last year. You know, they bring back the same cast of characters you know, who I think, like, Watkins and Robinson are basically just cover for Hill and Mecole Hardman's ADP. Like, they're not really providing much value. So
if Hardman goes 60 catches, 900 yards, 8 touchdowns this year, it's going to be a good year in fantasy for me, for sure.
Yeah. Hardman's, you got to get some Hardman, man. He's going to be fun. But yeah, no, I'm betting on wide receiver one scoring to return to the recent levels. Like, I don't, we're probably not going to see like just the massive, like, Calvin Johnson target share type of dudes, but that's okay. That's not what we're betting on. Maybe outside of Davante Adams. But yeah, I think, well, I wanted to ask you about, you mentioned Tony Pollard as kind of that clear handcuff dude, and I agree. I think he's,
yeah, we should neither of us have put out our target articles yet, so we should give the people a little bit of a sneak preview here and talk about some of the guys we actually are targeting on zero RB teams.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about Kareem Hunt, because I think he's a really interesting guy for a number of reasons. One, he has standalone value. Like, he's being drafted at roughly the level you would expect.
Just being drafted pretty rich, but I don't think it's wrong.
Right. He's being drafted pretty rich. That's the other, he's expensive, but at the same time, I mean, who has more contingent value than Kareem Hunt? Like, if Nick Chubb gets hurt, I mean, maybe Tony Pollard does, but if Nick Chubb gets hurt, like, how is Hunt not a top five guy? The other thing with Hunt is, like, he has been a top five guy. We've seen him do this. Granted, it was in the Chiefs offense, but, you know, I think he could be like a true RB1 if Chubb were out of the picture.
Yeah, if Chubb gets hurt, Chubb gets benched, and we get 14 carries and 6 targets a game for Kareem Hunt. That's, I completely agree. Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah, so I'm pretty interested in him, although – it's the kind of the classic FFPC thing. And, you know, me and Pete Overzet have been doing like co-managing high stakes drafts there for a number of years. And it's just like, basically any running back you want is going like a half a round or a round ahead of where you would want them to go. So you're constantly like, there's very few values. And even the guys like, you know, later on in the draft, like the Pollards and stuff are generally priced up. So it's, you know, in FFPC, guys take running backs early and then they take running backs again late. So they're all kind of expensive. But I think Hunt's one of those dudes who, even though he's a little bit pricey, really does. He's got
half $1 million league winning ceiling, right? Because he could go on a tear of 6 straight weeks of scoring 20 or more PPR points, right? Like, just, you can totally see that. And, you know, one of the things that we haven't mentioned this yet, but in these high stakes formats, and this is true of the NFC, this is true of, I believe this is true, I guess I haven't played it yet, of the site that you and Pete play on, the FFWC, the Fantasy Football World Championship. But the playoffs in these leagues generally start in week 12 or week 13. So, like, early. And if you are 0-4, if you're starting off slow, if you're waiting for breakout running back candidates, like, you're already dusted off. Like, you need to be having guys who can get points in your starting lineup immediately. Like, the value of a hot start in these formats, FFPC specifically, is like very, very high.
Yeah, FFPC is an 11-week regular season. So, like, you cannot you truly cannot punt running back in a zero running back strategy. Also, FFPC has two wide receiver starters, two flexes, two running back starters. So you're not going to be hammering, like, there's not a third wide receiver position to be hammering your league mates at by being strong at wide receiver. Also, FFPC is tight end premium, which means that people can catch you in the flex with tight ends, even if their wide receivers suck. So there's like numerous reasons to where you have to modify a zero running back strategy for FFPC, but that doesn't mean a modified version can't be very effective there. And we do plan to employ like a modified zero running back structure. Although we are praying we get a top five pick in our main event.
Yeah. I imagine I'll probably do three main events this year. And, I think I'd be happy with two of three with top five picks. Last year, though, on one of our three, Christian McCaffrey fell to us at four in one of them.
Wow.
Isn't that absurd?
That's sick. That is unbelievable. Yeah. Wow. What time of the year was that?
Late. It was, I mean, I think we were drafting well, like third week of the preseason, fourth. Like we might've even drafted one like after the third. I think we even draft. Yeah, we did. We drafted one after the Thursday game. Like after the season had started.
Yeah. Interesting.
Okay. Zero RB guys. I DM'd you a list for an article that I am working on over at Sports Grid, and we kind of gave me some feedback on them, but I don't want to give away all the good picks because people got to work for it. But I think these are the, I want to throw to you some of the controversial ones that are guys who are not going, guys who are not popular. First one is Travion Williams. Seems like everyone kind of assuming that Giovanni Bernard would be the main guy, or that Rodney Anderson is going to be healthy enough to play. My take is Gio is just always going to be what he is. He's been a satellite back for the Bengals for his entire career there. I don't know why that would change now. And Rodney Anderson, just not healthy enough, right? The last time this guy played more than like three games in a row, he was like in high school. So I'm team Travion with your 20th pick in the FFPC.
Yeah, Travion feels to me more like a dynasty guy because Mixon is not signed next year. And Travion was someone they talked up a little bit a few months ago. Like the coaches, I think this was in a Matthew Berry article as he was talking to coaches at the combine. And they were just like, you know, talking up Williams, mentioning that he had led the SEC in rushing and stuff. And so I think you could see him potentially down the line with a bigger role. I think he would have a decent role with a Mixon injury. But you need that Mixon injury, or he's going to have zero.
Or holdout.
Or right? Holdout.
That's why Travion is on the list for me, is because of the potential holdout.
That's true. Are you buying this holdout stuff for any of these guys though, under the new CBA? I mean, I just think it's unlikely that any.
I buy it for Dalvin because the Vikings are dumb enough to pay him, and he knows that. I don't think Mixon will. I would put the chances of a Mixon holdout going into the regular season at like 4%.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I might even take the under just because there's no, I mean, one, the, I think if I understand the new CBA correctly, there's really, you almost can't hold out.
And then, but there's a wrinkle. Okay. If Cook shows up for like 3 days of training camp and then pieces out, I believe it's possible that he could accrue the service time.
Interesting.
Obviously, people listening, I do not know this for sure. I have seen that intimated by people who know more than I do on Twitter.
All right. Well, I need to do some more research then, because I was sort of under the impression that these holdouts were like basically non-stories because of the new CBA.
Yeah,
and because like Gordon just got punched in the face by this whole thing. Le'Veon Bell, it did not work out well. Like, there's not – I mean, if you're just like one of these running backs looking at the recent history of guys who tried to do this, it has not worked out well. So, I think it's like holdout insurance for the time being. I think that's a pretty reasonable pick. Travion Williams is someone, I don't know why there's not like no excitement about him as like a player, because he was pretty interesting running back, although he doesn't really profile as much of a pass catcher, which is disappointing.
Just fancy Kristen Michael. That's all he is.
Yeah.
Okay. So some other guys on the, some other maybe slightly more controversial guys. I think Justin Jackson and Josh Kelly should both make this list for everyone, basically operating under the assumption that Austin Eckler's great. He'll catch 80 passes, score 10 touchdowns or whatever, but I don't think Austin Eckler or the Los Angeles Chargers wants to use him as Christian McCaffrey, basically, right? Giving him 400 touches over the course of the year.
Are you just kind of trying to get both guys?
Get both. I did one in the draft we did last night. We wanted to get both and then got sniped on Josh Kelly coming back around. But I sort of like how with like, remember after McCoy got signed for the Chiefs last year, you try and get one of Damian or Darwin because they were going so late. Kind of similar to that of just like just thinking like there's enough touches available. I guess the issue with the Chargers might be is this is based off of like us thinking of like a 15-year sample of Philip Rivers and Chargers running backs being really awesome, and maybe Tyrod and Herbert just destroy all that value, and it's hard to shake that Chargers running back bias.
Yeah, although, you know, I think a Tyrod and Herbert could shift the type of value that we're getting out of that backfield, but maybe there's still plenty of value to be had, you know, if the running quarterback opens up maybe more rushing value. So I'm kind of interested in Kelly a little bit more.
Kelly's like the big back. Like Justin Jackson is really similar to Eckler. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like if we're – you can kind of bet – you're betting a little bit against Eckler when you take one of these guys anyway, that, you know, he won't dominate the backfield the way the guys taking him high up in the draft think he might. So you might as well take the guy whose profile is distinct and different from Eckler. And I think that's Kelly. Is the big back and the guy who could maybe clean up on the goal line.
Yeah, I think that is true. Okay, Nyheim Hines. This is, again, another controversial one because some people just don't buy the Frank Reich stuff of, like, he's still going to play. But, like, Nyheim Hines is literally the quintessential zero running back guy of, like, he's got upside if someone else gets hurt, though not a ton as we saw last year because they were throwing in, like, total no, like what Jonathan Williams was playing, Jordan Wilkins was playing. So not like he doesn't have like Austin Eckler level upside, but like sort of that FFPC bye week stopgap, six catches for 40 yards type stuff.
Yeah, Hines is Sean Siegel loves Hines, and I think in some ways he is a quintessential zero running back target. But so, you know, maybe a little sacrilegious for me, but I'm not really on Hines. I don't like the three-man backfields where it's like – it's one thing if it's an ambiguous backfield and I'm just betting on this dude to kind of emerge as a much bigger role than we expect. But I think the chances of that happening are pretty low with Hines. I mean, they just took Jonathan Taylor. Jonathan Taylor's an awesome prospect.
Yeah.
You know, I think he can catch. Maybe he's not going to be like a total space back or anything, but he should have a role there. And so I don't think that Hines will really be startable without an injury. And then even with an injury, it's not like he would be, a plug-and-play guy. So you need some things to break right for him to even be in your starting lineup. And even then, like, what are we talking about? Like, maybe 12 points a game or something? I mean, he's not someone I'm that excited about because I don't see how he accesses a ceiling.
Correct. Yeah, I think that's true. So the converse of that is a dude who doesn't have the same sort of like bye week floor, but Philip Lindsay with a Melvin Gordon ankle turn becomes a guy who would be going in probably the second round of like had Melvin Gordon not signed, and re-signed in LA or whatever, or signed in Tampa Bay. Where's Philip Lindsay going right now?
Yeah, I think he's in the third round.
Yeah. So Lindsay is a dude that I didn't start out the draft season being that excited by, but it seems like that team's just completely over Royce Freeman. Like Freeman's just going to go to being the emergency back, like playing special teams and stuff. So Lindsay is a guy I am really big on.
I like Lindsay a lot. And I agree with you. I don't think that's a three-man backfield. I think they're giving up on Royce Freeman. And I think Lindsey will have primarily, you know, a pass catching role, or at least he will be involved pretty heavily as a pass catcher. And so, like, you can probably get some standalone value out of him without a Gordon injury. The other thing is that Lindsey's good. Like, he's been good in that offense. I was kind of confused why they had that signing to begin with. Gordon's also joining a new team. Like, there's not a guarantee that – I think Gordon is good. I think Gordon will be good this year. But it's not a guarantee that he comes in and is awesome in that offense. Lindsey could outplay him. So, you know, and in which case I think Lindsey could maybe be an unexpected 1A in that offense. So there's paths that don't involve an injury. And I think there's paths where it could be – more of an even split, but Lindsey's getting enough receiving volume to make him startable as well. So kind of like a discount Kareem Hunt.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually think that is a good comparison. Okay. Chase Edmonds versus Eno Benjamin, you know, Kenyon Drake, guy's been hurt before. Guy is a smaller running back. Guy is not Ben. I mean, I guess Kenyon Drake was probably a lead running back in high school, but he wasn't at Alabama. He never was really a lead running back in Miami. There would be stretches where they would treat him like a starting running back, but actually kind of similar to Lamar Miller in Miami. He was never really like the out and out getting touches all the time starter. Now, he was super dominant for the Cardinals last season. Not sure. Not sure the role that they have planned out for Edmonds and Drake this year, but Edmonds is a guy that you can get, like, he goes in like the 12th, 13th ish round in non super sharp drafts, going to be a little bit earlier in sharper drafts. But you know, Benjamin, you can take with your last pick in any format. Are these guys on your zero RB list?
Yeah, I'm more on the Edmonds side of it, just because you know, Benjamin was a seventh round pick, and that's not usually a great bet. He was a really good player for a seventh round pick, but Edmonds has been good in the NFL. I think Edmonds, I mean, he just had some really bad luck last year with the timing of his injury, because if he had stayed healthy, you know, maybe they don't even trade for Drake, and he's,
yeah,
know, he's the guy going in the second round this year.
Right.
So I think Edmonds is a really good pick. I think one thing that struck me with Drake, so I've been doing some research on trying to figure out like what running backs we can take outside of the top five this year. And Drake is someone that I was pretty interested in because of just how good he was down the stretch. But when you look at his receiving volume last year, it wasn't really,
it wasn't as good as you remember, for sure. Yeah.
Right. He was getting about, he's getting like 3.1 receptions per game. As a
and he, I think he, if I'm remembering things correctly, I think he had like, instantly like a 60 yard touchdown reception or something. I think against the 49ers, like that very first game where people didn't even know if he was going to start. And right, that definitely is playing into it.
Yeah. So if he's, and you know, and Edmonds is, he's a pass catching back. Benjamin is as well. Like both those guys have pass catching profiles. So I think Benjamin might maybe cap Drake's value, because I think the Lamar Miller comparison is an excellent one for Drake, in that it's sort of like you look at Lamar Miller and you think, okay, this guy's going to catch a lot of passes. He's this quick back. And Drake profile similarly, but Miller never really did catch that many passes in Houston. And I think Drake is going to underperform your perception of him as a pass catcher this year. I think he's probably going to perform pretty similarly in terms of how many.
That is what people think they're drafting with Kenyon Drake, though. Like, that's like people think they're drafting five catches a game with him.
Yeah, that's not what he was doing last year. I think what you're getting is you're getting some really efficient rushes inside the 10-yard line with him. Like, he'll probably – I don't know how many, like, goal line carries he'll get, but I think because of Kyler, he's going to be really efficient on those types of runs. And then he's going to be the like lead back there. You're going to get like a lot of, you know, kind of the trap carries. Ben Grutch's trap stat basically carries outside of the 10-yard line. But you're not probably going to get this dominant receiving workload. I think this is sort of a tangent, but I think the guy who's got the potential outside of the top five running backs is Miles Sanders. because he can actually get like four receptions per game.
I mean, that dude goes at like pick five sometimes now.
That's true. Yeah, he's on with Dalvin Cook's holdout thing. He actually is in the top five. So, yeah, I guess it's like kind of a moot point.
But I can't. I'm no longer arguing it against this position.
Yeah, I think he's like, I don't know. It again goes to the thing of the FFPC where I'm like, okay, yeah, Miles Sanders, like he's a dude who's not in the top five picks, and I'm kind of interested. I'm in. And then I looked at the ADP today. Yeah, and he's like 105 now. So what the hell? What the hell? But yeah. But yeah, I think Edmonds is pretty interesting as the guy who could be the pass catcher in the Cardinals offense. And if Drake fails, it's probably because he gets like 2.5 receptions per game because Edmonds has some real standalone value.
Yeah. Okay. Tariq Cohen actually is on my list. And he was not a guy I was drafting last year in like the sixth round or whatever. But I think it's sort of simple to me. Like Cohen has that pass catching whatever, and he probably like doesn't kill you. Like his floor is probably fine or whatever at his ADP. But if anything happens to Montgomery, their third running back is like Ryan Nall, who's like a converted fullback. Like they don't even really have like a young athletic guy who could be in the timeshare with Cohen. Like Cohen would immediately be like a really good fantasy asset if something happened to Montgomery.
Yeah, I think Cohen's an awesome target this year because his price has dropped considerably. So he was overdrafted last year, but he's like running back 39 right now. He's going just inside the top 100 in FFPC. So, I mean, yeah, he's the guy that you're going to be able to start. And to your point, I mean, he's got a lot of contingent value. Like he could be kind of in an Austin Ekeler type of role if Montgomery were to go down. Montgomery, you know, maybe they use him more as a pass catcher this year, but I don't really buy that. He wasn't very good last year. So, you know, he didn't really make a case to be used a lot more. Cohen was not very good last year either, but you know, it's like if all of your backs sucked and you didn't bring any new backs, then maybe, you know, you would expect them to just kind of use them similarly to how they used them last year. And Cohen had over 100 targets last year. So, I think he really fits the profile of what we're looking for. We want guys who are definitely going to have a pass catching role. You know, if something were to happen to the guy ahead of them, they could see a pretty big role increase. There's not like a guy behind Cohen, as you mentioned. There's no real threat of a three.
Yeah, there's no threat of some random dude coming in and you know, like Kareth White, guy they spent a draft pick on, not even on the team anymore. He's on the Steelers. Like it's Ryan Nall and Taquan Mizell, who they converted to wide receiver, actually.
Yeah, you want to be skeptical of these pass catching backs who are kind of pigeonholed in that role. They're too small. Like Cohen's 5'6", like 180. Like he's really yes. small. Like he's a pass catching back. So you want to be very price dependent,
sensitive.
These guys, yeah, very price sensitive. Yeah, on these running backs, like with that specific profile. But Cohen is priced well this year. He was not
priced well. Yeah, same with James White, by the way. James White was exactly. expensive last year. Like you can take him this year. Also, we just had news that Sony Michel is having off-season foot surgery, so seems like we are gonna get a little spike of James White and Damian Harris ADP here for whatever that's worth. I don't know. I drafted James White in a Football Guys Players Championship in like the 12th round last night, but that's really the only range I feel comfortable with him.
Yeah, I think White's someone who's like kind of a hold your nose type of pick, but he is someone that is worth drafting this year, especially if, yeah, he's available in that range.
All right, do you have any guys you want to tout, or do you want to save it for the article?
Let me see. Well, one guy that's not on your list is, I have a couple thoughts. One is, are you not in at all on Keyshawn Vaughn, and am I going to be
you're a Keyshawn Vaughn guy?
What is happening?
Yeah, I'm drafting Ronald Jones, buddy.
So why are you talking me into Ronald Jones?
he's already he's on the team. I've already seen Ronald Jones play in the NFL. I agree that the coaches don't like him very much, but Ronald Jones at least sort of presents the potential for like explosive plays, long touchdowns. The nicest thing you can say about Keyshawn Vaughn is that he's just not really that bad at anything. And maybe that's what Brady wants, but I'm not that interested in it, especially if it's going to be a three-way split, especially if they're interested in Devonta Freeman, especially if Dare Ogunbowale is not going to get cut and still play third downs. Like, I think the likely answer is that every Buccaneers running back ends up being a negative win rate player, and you don't want any of them. But Ronald Jones, I believe it's true that Ronald Jones is younger than Keyshawn Vaughn.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's like Keyshawn Vaughn is an overage running back who's in a timeshare. I see basically no chance he's a workhorse, right? Is there any chance he gets 80%, 70% of the Buccaneers running back touches? Like, no way, right?
No way.
Yeah.
No way. His path is receiving. Because Ogunbowale,
his path is 60 catches. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Ogunbowale.
Maybe he just takes. Maybe Dare just completely goes away. Keyshawn plays all the third downs. Ronald Jones gets the trap work, and he's useless too. I can see it. I don't really like any of them.
So Jones, the thing with Jones is, I think he could have like a dominant role around the goal line. He was pretty good there, and he was basically splitting that work with Peyton Barber.
Barber
obviously is gone. So Ogunbowale got some goal line work, but it was all hurry up stuff. If they're in a hurry up offense, they weren't putting in Jones or Barber. They're just leaving in Ogunbowale and giving him like a shotgun goal line carry, that type of thing. But I think that's Jones's path, because there's real risk of him being a trap running back. But yeah, there's no one to really compete with him for the goal line stuff. So my thing with him, though, is that he's a little expensive right now, and I've seen the market just hate this dude for 2 years.
And now you're like, what the hell? Why would I draft this guy now that he has real competition?
Yeah, right. Now he actually has some decent competition, and the competition is on the pass catching side. Last year with Jones, it's like, well, Peyton Barber can't catch. Dare, we didn't even know who he was. And so there was like a really plausible path to Jones having decent receiving work. And he actually did have 31 receptions last year, by the way. People act like he literally can't catch a single ball.
He had eight catches in one game.
Yeah. I mean, the dude is awesome on screens. Like I really hope they use him on early down screens this year as well.
At the end of the day, it is really – Brady likes Keyshawn, Brady likes Dare, yeah. Brady likes Jones. It's literally like Brady is going to call all the shots. He is going to design their playbook. He's going to be like, we're playing OJ Howard over Godwin. We're playing, you know, like whatever Brady wants is what Brady is going to get. I am sure that in his negotiations with Byron Leftwich is the offensive coordinator there. I'm sure he sat down with Arians and Leftwich is like, if we're doing this, I'm calling the shots. This is Tom Brady's Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And if Brady likes Vaughn, I'm going to be wrong. And Vaughn's going to play a ton and catch a ton of passes.
I think Jones is probably the best bet, but I just know he's not going to be priced like this in August. Like, people are going to get excited about, I don't understand why the dynasty market is so excited about Vaughn, but the FFPC market is still kind of in on Jones. I was expecting to be able to get Jones, you know, around 10, 11. And that he's not available there. So I'm kind of waiting for that with Jones. I'm not really drafting him at the moment, but Pete Overzet's trolling me for being out on Jones and destroying my brand. But I'm just biding.
I mean, you keep taking Keyshawn over him.
No. Yeah. Well, I think Keyshawn is like, now's the time to get exposure to Keyshawn Vaughn. And also I have 0% of Keyshawn Vaughn in Dynasty because his price there is ridiculous. So it's like, I think it makes sense now to get exposure to him and redraft, because I think he's about as cheap as he's going to be. I expect his ADP to climb. I expect Jones to drop. So that's the way I'm playing that. A guy that you didn't have on the list that feels like a very Davis Maddocky type of player to me, just because he's very athletic, he's big, is Antonio Gibson.
The slappies have ruined Antonio Gibson. He's going, like, he goes to, like, pick 100. it's like, how do you profit on that? He's got to beat out Geis. Peterson has to not play, and he's got to play wide receiver sometimes too.
Is he like going that high? I thought he was going like more like pick 120.
I will. Let me pull it up. But I know at a, it's possible that his ADP has shifted. So last four days in the FFP, in the Football Guys Players Championship, he goes RB 46. He goes in between Philip Lindsay, Latavius Murray. I prefer both of those guys over him. And it's like, I like him. And if he was going around cheaper, I'd still be in on him. But like, he's being drafted as if these things that Ron Rivera are saying about him are like inherently true, that like they're ready to give him all these touches right away. And I just don't know if that's the case.
I like him a lot, and I think I'm probably going to pay the premium.
Okay. I mean, I think he's a great player. Like, I really like him as a player. I love dudes like this in the NFL.
Yeah, because so the other piece that was out this week was J.J. Zacharyson's piece on like, how to look at these, what profiles to be looking for the zero running back targets later in the draft. And he was, I think the big takeaway for me was that he was emphasizing that we want guys who are not pure handcuffs, that we want dudes who are like in committees and in ambiguous backfields. And a lot of what Sean Siegel's shown is that we also want guys who are really athletic. We already talked about how we want them to be pass catchers. JJ was saying, like, you know, I think 20 of his 39 hits were year three or younger, but that means that, you know, the other 19 guys were older. So it's not like they have to be young, but I still think that it's definitely an advantage to be targeting these young guys, particularly because they're probably more athletic. So like, Gibson just kind of checks all those boxes. He's a pass catcher. He's really, I mean, he's running a 4.39 at like 228. He's big. He has a path to goal line work. If, you know, if he looks like the best back there, his size would certainly give him the path to that work in a way that, like, you know, Tariq Cohen, as we talked about, he's completely locked out of those types of carries. So he's just, and it's like, on top of the personnel making that situation really ambiguous with Peterson and Geis and Love, and there's like injury question marks, age question marks, they also have a new coaching staff. So they're not tied to any of these dudes. I could see, you know, if Rivera likes Gibson the best, the guy they just took, why wouldn't he just roll with him?
It's the age-old question. Yeah, I maybe he would, right? It's not like he doesn't owe anything to Darius Geis. He doesn't owe anything to Adrian Peterson. It's weird to me that they have so many guys, right? That they have Love and McKissick and Barber and Geis and Peterson and Gibson. Like, it is strange to me that, I mean, that doesn't preclude Gibson from breaking out, but it is strange to me that they invested so much at this one position in the same time frame with Ron Rivera as the coach.
But they didn't really invest that much because they brought in Barber. I think Barber can be cut for no dead cap. They brought in McKissick, you know, cheap veteran contract, and then they draft Gibson. So you don't know you're going to get Gibson. So to me, it's like, if you're a running back and then a team signs Peyton Barber and JD McKissick, like, you're not a very good running back. That's an indictment of Geis. Or that's an indictment.
I mean, it's certainly an indictment of yeah, it's an indictment of Geis. It's an indictment of Adrian Peterson. It's also an indictment of Geis's knees, of just being like,
right,
look, man, this dude just can't play running back in the NFL. He's too fragile.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's disappointing what's happened with Geis. I think he was a talented player. But yeah, I think it reminds me of Nick Chubb a little bit as a rookie, and it reminds me of Alvin Kamara as a rookie, where you've got these guys where it's like, how the heck can I project, you know, Gibson to really have anything? It's just going to be this awful muddled committee. But I think when you get a guy who's super athletic and he's going to get on the field as a pass catcher, probably right away, then you kind of just, you bet. And all these dudes ahead of him aren't very good. And the coaching staff isn't tied to any of them. Then I think it's a lot of cover for his ADP. I think, you know, compared to a dude like Lindsey needs an injury to really become that, that league winning type of player. Latavius Murray 100% needs an injury. So Gibson, I think, has a path to just outplay his competition. And I think that's pretty appetizing at his price.
Yeah. I mean, I can't disagree with that. It is pretty appetizing for his price. So maybe I'll rethink it. Maybe I will. Maybe I'll go digging for some like Geis quotes or something. You know, maybe I just need to think a little bit more about it. Cause he's been a guy where I've been like, I don't get it at all, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. Well, I'll have my zero running back article coming out soon on, I'll probably be splitting it up into pieces, but I'll have plenty to say on Gibson.
All right, there we go. What else can we, look for coming out soon on Establish the Run?
Yeah. So I'm going to be doing, I'm still trying to plan out exactly how I'm going to do it. I think, but I'll have at least like two, maybe three articles on zero running back coming out soon. Looking at specific player targets. And then we got a lot of cool stuff going on. We just brought on Mike Leone as doing projections and director of analytics there. So he's got some really interesting ideas that we're kind of talking about behind the scenes as well. So we're going to be rolling out lots of good stuff coming up.
All right, everyone, follow Pat on Twitter. At Pat Corain. And you know what? Me, you, and Pete should do one of these football guys, right? Like you guys can do your ship chasing and your quad manage with Hassan and Blair. But I think the people would love for us to do one of these football guys together for sure. I think the folks would be in.
I would love that. Yeah. So I should also mention Pete and I are doing ship chasing again this year, although name maybe not ship chasing. We're just trying to figure that out because we will not be. Last year we were under the 4-for-4 umbrella, but we're going out on our own this year. So we got to figure out launch date and all that stuff. But yeah, we're coming back with that podcast. We should definitely do a tri-managed team.
Tri-managed.
And then we're going to be doing, I think, two FFPC main events this year. And we also have another league that looks like we're adding as well. So.
Beautiful.
And we'll be doing the quad managed. We want a ticket to another football guys players championship by doing the playoff challenge. So we are bringing back the quad managed team as well.
Love it. Love to see it. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Talk to all you guys soon.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.